show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's official. We mentioned it last week, but we're still on Moose Hug Watch as of right now, as of recording this. So we've got Twitter pulled up. We've got everything ready to go in case we get some breaking news while we're recording the podcast. We can bring it to you with our instant reactions. But until then, we're just on standby. So we'll continue on with the show as normal. And before we get into everything that we're going to talk about, I, of course, am Jeff Furr. With me, as always, is the man who is always on Hug Watch, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this evening?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm having one of those, like, I did the same thing last week, but, like, I hope I didn't mention it on the show last week, but it's that kind of day where it's like, I can't believe it's already Wednesday, but at the same time, I can't believe it's only Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what is happening? Like, I don't know, just crazy times, but yeah, good. I mean, I'm here. I made it this far, so.
Yeah, my wife is a lawyer, and she's working on this big case, and she had to work this past weekend. And so she was talking tonight at dinner, and she's just like, I cannot believe it's only Wednesday. So I definitely – she knows your pain, and I've – this week has just been like a normal week, but I've definitely had those weeks where it's, oh, my God, it's only Wednesday.
Right.
The worst is you're like, oh, man, it's only Tuesday, and then it's – I mean, it's just – it's all downhill from there.
Yeah. When you're already looking to the weekend and it's only Tuesday, it's like, well
– it's bad.
Yeah. That's a long next, you know, 3-plus days.
Yes, it is.
But, hey, you know, we're over the hump, so.
We are. And over the hump of the season are the Kansas City Royals, and perhaps on the backside have decided to maybe play some baseball. Because so far, the Royals are the hottest team in baseball in the second half. I don't know if that's true. But they started off right after the All-Star break. They won 3 in a row against the Minnesota Twins.
3.
They lost They lost the first one to Detroit, and then they won it again. So they won 4 out of 5. Of course, they lost today to the Detroit Tigers 8-4 before we got on and recording a very subpar performance from Danny Duffy on the mound today. But so far, I mean, Royals taken 4 out of 6. They won their first series since I don't even know when.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Since St. Louis? I think so. May. I've got their schedule pulled up, so I'm looking here. Now, at the end of May, they also took a series from Minnesota. That's
sorry,
the only
Minnesota.
One. But this was a sweep. I mean, is this the first sweep of the season?
First three game sweep. Yeah.
Yep.
Their last three game sweep was last July. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And they had the lead in that fourth game out of the break, too, but Brandon Maurer decided that wasn't fun, so.
Well, as he often does.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing. He's a fun killer.
Yes, he is. That should be his nickname, actually.
Fun killer.
Fun killer, indeed. But it's, you know, it's positive. The Royals have shown some life, you know, and it's not just – we have remarked before about how – you know, unfortunately, a lot of the Royals' wins are in that 2-1, 1-0 thing where you have to absolutely get a gangbusters performance from your pitching staff because you know the offense is not going to score any runs. And we had, 23 straight games or something where they had less than 9 hits and less than 4 runs, which is some sort of record or I don't know. So yeah. I can't remember what that streak was, but it was absurd, whatever the hell it was. I'm glad I don't remember it right now. But they had that going on, and so it was just the offense just won't show up. And if they don't get it, if they even just get a decent performance from their pitching staff. They're still probably going to lose because the offense was so putrid. But, you know, they've shown they haven't been setting the world on fire necessarily, but, you know, they had 6 runs, 4 runs, 5 runs, 4 runs, 5 runs, and 4 runs so far in the first 6 games after the break, which, you know, compared to what they were doing for most of the month of June, where they only had over 4 runs once, twice, three times in the month of June, they only had over four runs. So already they've eclipsed that since the All-Star break. And they actually, you know, right before the break, they lost 10-1 in the last game before the break, but the 4 games before that, they had 9, 5, 6, and 5 runs. So
juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean, the offense is starting to wake up a little bit. Too little, too late, unfortunately, you know, because the Royals are 31-70. That's right, 70. Oh, man, that's an ugly number. God, it looks bad, doesn't it? I mean, it is, but it looks as bad as it is.
Yeah, and that's after winning, you know, 4 out of the 6 games to start the second half. I mean, it's like they have this really good kind of, you know, week coming back from the break, and they're still really, really bad overall in the record. But
39 games below 500.
Yeah.
Which is, if the Royals won 39 games in a row, which would just absolutely destroy the winning streak record for Major League Baseball, they would still only be 500 and likely not even in the wild card hunt. So
yeah,
it's just a massively just not good set of circumstances. And then to make matters worse, you know, 4-6. Okay. You think, hey, you know, a little bright spot, a little fun, but all that's done is given the Royals a 2.5 game lead over the Baltimore Orioles.
Air quote lead.
Which means yes, lead, quote unquote, or put them 2.5 games behind in the race to the bottom, if
there
you will, as the Orioles now stand in position to have the number one pick in the draft. And, you know, they just traded
Machado and Zach Britton both.
As we talked about last week, and we talked about the Machado trade, and we said the Zach Britton trade was coming, and they're a demonstrably worse team now without those players. So it's not like they're, you know, gunning for any sort of a second half resurgence or anything. So the Royals, I mean, but between the two of them, they pretty well got it locked up. The only other, as far as the top two picks are concerned, the only other candidate would be the Chicago White Sox, as they are, they're 5 games behind the Royals right now. So,
and they own the Royals, you know.
Yeah, they've dominated them this year.
So
it's like the only reason they have more wins than the Royals is because of how many times they've beaten the Royals.
Yeah, it's a rough little year.
It is, but and it's really quite amazing when you really look at how bad the AL Central is. Man, that's rough. So
yeah,
let's see.
Yeah, Cleveland got a pretty good break, considering that, you know, their 55 wins wouldn't even be in a wild. I mean, they'd be behind Oakland, who trail in the wild card already. So,
yeah,
you know, they'd be a couple games behind them. So, yeah, I mean, they lucked out. Now, Cleveland started pretty slow, too, and they'd been better, but yeah, I mean, there's not a good team in the AL Central other than Cleveland, and Cleveland has not been that great. So it's a rough division. Cleveland
got a division. Every other division except for the NL East has at least 3 teams with 50 wins. And both the NL Central, NL West, and the AL West have 4 teams with 50 wins. And the NL East has 2 teams with 50 wins and 1 with 49. But the AL Central only has 1 team with 50 wins and 2 teams without 40. Every division except for the AL East and the AL Central none of them even have a team with less than 40 wins.
Well, the Royals had to win 4 out of 6 to get over 30. So
that's right. Yeah.
God.
I mean, it's I hate to feel like we're being Debbie Downers about this, but it's hard to find good things to really talk about when a team is this atrociously bad.
Yeah.
I wish it was easier. I wish we could be more positive, but it's hard to be.
Yeah. I mean, they're starting to show. We've talked numerous times all year about like finding guys who are fun and like having some kind of enjoyment, something to look out for. And like, you know, Jorge Bonifacio is back and Rosel Herrera has played pretty well. You know, the pitching over the last week, Danny Duffy's outing today. You know, if we omit that, you know, they opened the break with, you know, five guys coming out, all holding their opponents under 3 runs, you know, getting 6+ strikeouts, including good performances from Heath Philmeyer and Birch Smith. Birch Smith hasn't really pitched that well at all this year. Last night, he looked really, really good. Brad Keller bounced back after some rough starts. Heath Philmeyer's looked pretty good almost every time I've seen him. So, I mean, there's that. You get to kind of see those guys. Now, all of those guys, all those rookies are going to be pitching in Yankee Stadium in the next series. So that's a little scary. But and Jake Junis, too, who's given up, I think he still leads the majors in home runs allowed. But if not, he's definitely in the top 3 to 5.
He's got to be up there.
Yeah. So, you know, but he came back. He looked a lot better, too. And so now you kind of get Duffy, who this game was a stinker today, but he's pitched pretty well over the last month and, you know, kind of gotten himself back into where, you know, you would expect him to be as far as his statistics, especially after really, really rough start to the year. So I don't know. I mean, that's something to kind of keep an eye on. You know, see if those guys can continue to have good outings. The Royals just picked up Brian Goodwin in a trade on the a couple days ago, Monday, I believe, maybe Sunday. Guy from the Washington Nationals, 27 years old, you know, can draw a walk, has a little bit of power, not a bunch of average. But, you know, he's played in a couple games and he's got a few hits already and you know, seems like someone that they want to get a good look at in center field regularly. So that's another player to kind of watch for. You know, so there's stuff to kind of pay attention to. Whit Merrifield's playing well. Salvador Perez has played well over the last week. Lucas Dude is playing well. So, you know, there are positives. But it's, you know, all told, you know, they're still not winning a lot of games. The bullpen's really shaky, to say the least. But, you know, there's at least things to look at and things to watch. But, you know, really kind of the main thing at the end is going to matter is, you know, where they stand relative to Baltimore. And, you know, if they get the number one or number two pick. And it's pretty much down to that. Like, are they going to get the number one overall again? Or are they going to get a number two overall? And, it's not a fun race to watch, but you know that's what it is. You know, there's not really a way around it. That's they played poorly, and you know, few bright spots aren't enough
small
to like
small consolation prize, I suppose.
Right? Yeah, it's just like, well, okay, that's fine. But they when they're scoring some runs at least, you know, compare it to June. You know, June was so miserable. It was hard to just watch because you never even thought that they were going to get anything. Now, at least they're kind of doing something. So there's that, if nothing else. But yeah, by and large, you know, there's a good reason to be a Debbie Downer because they're not having a good season. So, and it's not going to get any better once they start trading guys off, whether that's through the rest of this week or, you know, once the waiver trade period starts up in August, you know, and some of these guys go for, you know, pretty cheap deals. You know, it's going to be a weird last couple months, but, you know, there are at least, you know, those things, those players to kind of keep an eye on.
And with your mentioning of Brian Goodwin, they're in a fortunate, I hesitate to say anything fortunate about this season, but if there is a fortunate thing coming from being 31-70, which there are very few, besides the top, high draft pick, they're in that position where they can get a player like Brian Goodwin, or you talked about Rozell Herrera, and bring him up, and they can give them a chance, and they can, they're in that acquiring talent phase of the rebuild, which unfortunately that means that the rebuild is a lot farther off than I think people would like to admit. But at the same time, it means that they've got to be, and I think they are, open to everything and every avenue. You know, if they can make a trade for a 27-year-old player like Brian Goodwin, who hasn't done a ton, but you know, maybe he wakes up and does a little something for the Royals, then hey, they can afford to do that right now, because there's nothing at stake. So if we're trying to paint a good picture and trying to say, you know, oh, here's a silver lining to this cloud hanging over this, the 2018 season, I guess you could say it's that at this point, where, I mean, if the Royals were in contention, then we likely never would have seen anything from Rozell Herrera to know that there's even anything there. And right now, we still don't know if there's a ton there, but there's enough to have our attention, to have our curiosity. There's enough to say, okay, maybe he can be a major league player. Maybe he's a fourth outfielder. Maybe he's an everyday guy. You know, but there's something there that's worth exploring for the Royals right now. And that's what they're doing. And you can get the same from a Brian Goodwin or something, you know, and from 2012 essentially to 2017, there really wasn't, and more like 2013 to 2017, the Royals didn't really have that space. They couldn't afford to have that opportunity provided to certain to players, because they were trying to be competitive and they had all these, they couldn't afford to give that up. But, you know, now they can. And maybe Herrera and Brian Goodwin will never be anything, but that's fine. We can find out if they will be. And it's just, yeah, acquiring as much talent as they can at this point, and good for them. You know, you hope you strike gold on something. If not, you keep moving with your plan. You know, you just had a huge draft with lots of players that you got this past year. You just keep chugging along, keep developing talent, keep looking everywhere, finding those players and getting them in and making it happen, because it's definitely not happening this year. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, not barring a miracle. Yeah, I mean, I think that the one thing that they have right now is they have opportunities for playing time for some guys. And, you know, if you just throw a bunch of guys and maybe something sticks, then, well, you found something. You know, I mean, think of those years where, you know, hey, Joaquin Soria was a Rule 5 guy, and they turned out to find an all-star closer because they had the opportunity to just give the guy innings. They're in the same kind of position with Brad Keller right now, where, you know, he got the opportunity to make the big league club. He pitched well. They put him in the rotation because of injuries and other ineffectiveness. He pitched well there. And now maybe there's a guy that they weren't completely expecting that could be a number three, number four starter for him. They're finding that stuff out. Herrera, maybe he's only a fourth outfielder. Maybe he never sticks. But they get the chance to kind of look at him and see if he can be a part of future teams. He and Goodwin are both guys who have plenty of team control. I mean, Goodwin's not even arbitration eligible yet. He's been in the majors, you know, played about 140 games. But, you know, who is he going to play over in Washington with Bryce Harper and Juan Soto and, you know, Adam Eaton and Michael Taylor out there? You know, he wasn't going to get the playing time. So the Royals have the chance to go get him for, you know, fairly cheap. I mean, they traded a pitcher at a high A to get him, who, you know, has some velocity and a good strikeout to walk rate, but you never know what those guys are going to turn out to be. So you get a cheap acquisition for a guy who's not really, you know, locked into a large salary. And if he plays the rest of this year and does something great, you might have found a guy who can play. He's, you know, 27. So he's in those kind of peak years, through just a brief, you know, basically a season's worth of games. He's got, you know, decent little numbers. You know, he walks about 8.5-9% of the time. Compare that to Whit Merrifield, who walks 9% of the time this year. That's okay. He does strike out a lot, you know, about 27% of the time, but that's comparable to like Adalberto Mondesi. So, you know, while that's not a good strikeout rate, it's not like it's outrageous. And, you know, his isolated power is, you know, over 200 for his career, which is in Mike Moustakas territory. So if he gets regular playing time and those kind of things hold, you might have found a player who for the next 3-4 years can really do something for you and maybe be a part, you know, at the end of his run, a part of, you know, what the Royals are looking for. You know, that he might be somebody who's on the next good team. And that's really what it's about. It's finding the guys who are on the next good Royals team. Whether that's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the line, you know, take a chance now, find these guys and see if you can, you know, take a cast off and turn them into something. You know, guys like, you know, Jose Bautista so many years ago was just some guy that got released. And now he's, you know, he's got so many different all-star games and big home run seasons behind him. And Daniel Murphy was kind of just floating around and made some adjustments and turned into something. And guys like that pop up a lot. And, you know, the Royals, maybe if they get lucky, you know, they take a shot on someone who some other team was ready to move on from and, you know, see what happens. And if it doesn't, well, the Royals aren't really like flush with big time talent that's ready for the majors in their upper minors yet. So like the guys they're counting on are in A ball. So they're a couple years away. So it's not like you're taking playing time from somebody. It's not like signing Jeff Francoeur to see what happens and having him block Will Myers for, you know, a season and a half.
Or Melky Cabrera blocking Lorenzo Cain.
Yes, exactly. It's like you've got the chance to put these guys in, and if they fail, well, you're already 40 games under. You're already getting the second pick. There's not really much further down to go. And if they succeed, then, you know, maybe you found something. So it's they're good risks to take. They're pretty low risk, maybe moderate reward, but, you know, it's worth a shot. And, you know, I expect them to kind of maybe do some of that later as, you know, maybe some teams try to, you know, sneak guys through and maybe they, you know, want to make some room on the rosters for more established players. You know, the Royals might have a couple other shots over the next month to kind of add some people too. So, you know, there's no real downside to it. You know, if Paulo Orlando doesn't get at bats because they got Brian Goodwin, okay, fine with that. I think Paulo Orlando is probably the only guy who really has a problem with that.
Yes,
these days. So, it's totally worth trying to get him. You know, you might as well take a shot. And if they don't work, you just you move on. You move on and try the next thing.
Well, if you remember back in, you know, the 2012-2013 era, it was all about, especially after they traded for James Shields. And, you know, one of the big things was, okay, not only is Shields a good pitcher, but he's been to a World Series. He was on some winning teams with the Rays. He can teach this team how to win. And that's kind of a code word to encompass a lot of little things, but or a code phrase. It's essentially saying, okay, how does a player on a winning team conduct themselves? How do they maintain a high level of intensity for an entire season? How do they, you know, act in relation to the other teammates, et cetera, et cetera? So I think there's a lot of those types of things that are talked about what people are really talking about when they say learn how to win. And so, but that was a big topic, you know, learning how to win for these guys because they were all young and they won so much at the minors, but, you know, and they were all together and winning in the minors, but it didn't matter because it was different in the majors. So, you know, whenever this next wave comes, if they'd be as successful, there's going to be a lot of talk of that as well. And so it's going to be good to at least have some sort of transition there, because you know, so many of the players from the championship teams are already gone, and definitely they'll all be gone by the time, with the possible exception of maybe Salvador Perez and Danny Duffy. But, you know, so you get people in now to kind of learn from those guys, and then maybe they can transition that to the new group of players. That's, again, a lot of kind of coach speak, if you will, about a lot of things, but at least it's something. You know, I think that there's a little bit to it. It's not a I don't think it's that they're not going to win if they don't have these people that teach them how to win, all that kind of a stuff. But, you know, it definitely can't hurt to have people who have been around, even if they haven't necessarily been fully participatory in all the success, to be around the people that have had the success and see how they conduct themselves, et cetera. You know, I mean, the Royals had no success for so long that, you know, it really was something where I don't know that they necessarily knew how to conduct themselves. And, you know, that, because I think that was a little bit of back in 2003, you know, a little bit of that slide in the second half. You know, it's hard to keep that intensity. If that was so amazing about that 2015 team, you know, I mean, we talked about it during that season on this show, just the level of intensity that team was able to maintain through 162 games was nothing short of amazing, and maybe one of the biggest aspects of their success. You know, it was so incredible, because it's so hard. And maybe it just seems so much different because we'd seen so many teams just, you know, get into July at 31-70 and just, you know, just kind of going through the motions. And so maybe just the contrast is what made it seem so amazing. But man, it was just that, you know, they had a little bit of a bumpy road in August.
That one little dip, and people panicked because it hadn't happened.
Freaked out.
Like, it's like, oh crap, are they going to just be able to flip the switch back on? Yeah, they did. They it was not a problem. They had a week to 10 days where they were a little rough, and then they went back out and finished. It was, you know, that's how it went. Yeah, I think that was a unique team. I think that definitely was yeah, I think that's definitely something where the experience of the year before definitely probably kept them going. You know, it's you never know. I mean, you never know. There's an alternate universe where the Royals don't get out of that wild card game, and maybe they bring back the same types of guys in 2015, and they're just as good as they were in 2015, and it's all fine. But you know, they started that year 7-0. They got in all those fights. I think there was some kind of fire to that team that, you know, they kind of acquired themselves, but they also had the benefit of 2013 with playing meaningful games into the last, you know, homestand in September, you know, which hadn't happened in forever. You know, even 2003, that team was more or less kind of faded out by that stretch. So that, I think that really gives them like 2 years going into 2015 where they had like, oh, games that matter. And, you know, they were in that position at one point. And then, you know, in 2015, they were used to it. They were fine with it. And, you know, that group kind of figured it out. Most of those guys aren't here now. Obviously, Moustakas is probably going to be gone by next week's show, I would guess. You know, so that leaves what? Duffy, Sal, Gordon. But like you were saying, guys who are going to be around in a couple years where that next, quote, wave comes through, you know, Gordon probably won't be here. Duffy and Sal might be the only guys. So, you know, if that takes, cool. But, you know, maybe the Royals are in a similar position in a couple of years. But yeah, I think it's interesting to think about all those things and how the, you know, kind of the years overlap, the teams overlap and things like that. And, you know, if you're getting in guys now who are starting to kind of like find their way in the big leagues and they're around veterans who have had some of that playoff experience, you know, it's sure not going to hurt those guys who are just figuring it out now. You know, Adalberto Mondesi being around LCD's Escobar, for as bad as Escobar is, you know, he's following a guy who's been in those situations at least. So, you
if
know,
nothing else for Escobar, the streak showed how someone can maintain for an extended period of time. And there's value in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's intangible, and I don't know what percent it is, but I don't think it hurts. You know, and that's the main thing. It's like, don't do things right now that will actively hurt you, at least as far as developing guys. And, you know, I think the Royals could probably play Mondesi over Escobar a lot more than they seem to want to. But things like that aren't really like big travesties yet, you know. And so if they've got all those guys in the clubhouse and they're able to kind of see the veterans, and then those pitchers, you know, are able to see Danny Duffy, you know, adjust after failure, you know, because he was pretty rough for those first 2 months, and then he made adjustments and he was, you know, he got a lot better. And now some of those guys can maybe see what he's done and how he's gotten through it, and learn from that as they're, you know, these guys are rookies. Junis has, you know, a few starts last year, but, you know, not a ton. You know, Birch Smith, still a rookie, a little bit of major league experience back in like 2013, but is brief. Keller, obviously, he's 22 years old, very much a rookie. Phil Meyer, also a rookie, and, you know, late to pitching besides. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that they can learn being around a big veteran clubhouse. For as much as, like, you know, guys like us who are a little more statistically oriented, or at least, you know, like to use that as part of the analysis, I don't think it hurts. I don't think it hurts to be around those kind of situations and, you know, watch guys be professional and try to figure it out as they go. So, you know, bring in all the young guys, see what happens, yeah, see what sticks, go for it, and you know, be ready to kind of, you know, teach some lessons. They're taking their lumps now, but, you know, it might be something that 2 years down the line, you know, they learn from because they got the opportunity.
Absolutely. And just kind of thinking about this, if the Royals are able to create that second wave and they're actually able to win something, you know, go to a World Series, win another World Series, who knows, whenever that may be. First of all, awesome.
Right.
Second of all, I think I would feel terrible for Whit Merrifield and all this, because in all likelihood, by the time that second wave got around, Whit Merrifield will not be around to be a part of that team. So he would have been like the one guy in between both. And like, especially when, and I don't think we talked about it on this show, but that story that Rustin Dodd wrote a little while ago, like a couple weeks maybe, about, or did we talk about, I can't remember, but
no, I don't think we did,
about how Whit Merrifield was called up in 2015. He was going to be on the team and he was ready to go. He had his X-Pack,
I remember the hugs. I remember Minda Haas was reporting about hugs and stuff, and yep, it looked very much like he was coming.
Yep. And then and he got told by the manager, I can't remember who the AAA manager was.
I think it would have still been Poldberg.
Still Poldberg? Okay.
I think maybe that was the first year that he was out there.
I couldn't remember if he had taken over at that time yet.
Yeah, I don't remember. Because
he was in Double A.
Because Jerschle was third base coach in 2014, so
he was okay. That's right.
Yeah, I think it would have been Poldberg.
Okay. Been so Poldberg. Yeah, so he told him, and he had his backpacks. He was ready to go. And then at the last minute, the Royals changed their mind and said, "Oh no, we want somebody else." And I believe that somebody else was Dusty Coleman. So Whit Merrifield didn't get to go. And then, you know, eventually even Alberto Mondesi got to go onto the playoff roster. And yeah. they asked, so what did it feel like watching the World Series, knowing that that could have been you were so close? And he goes, I didn't watch the World Series. I was so upset, so distraught over the whole thing. And it just made me feel awful, you know, because
yeah,
Whit Merrifield's such an awesome guy. He worked so hard and so long for everything. And, you know, he's kind of been that guy. You know, he goes to South Carolina, very good baseball school. He's a very good player. He gets displaced as center fielder in college by somebody named Mookie Betts, who may end up being American League MVP this year.
Oh, there it was, Jackie Bradley Jr.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Red Sox. Great Red Sox.
That's my fault.
Bradley bumped Betts too, so.
Yeah.
Just like, God dang, man.
Yeah, so it's right.
But still, the same idea is like, okay, you got this job. Oh, you got to move.
Yeah, and he does, and he still performs well, still ends up getting taken in the draft, and he goes to the Royals and works hard and long, and his dad, to make the situation even worse, his dad was a professional baseball player, went up, played one game, got called up, didn't even he suited up for a game but didn't get to play. And then the next day he was running out from the dugout, tripped, broke his foot, and never played baseball again. So, you know, I mean, it's just this, and again, these are kind of first world problems, if you will, where it's like there are worse things in the world than these, but it's just from a standpoint of being athletes and being from a family of athletes and working that hard and being that close. And, you know, it feels bad when you hear those stories, especially knowing that, you know, Whit Merrifield's a pretty stand up guy. So if you were to have narrowly missed the World Series there, and then on the back end, you know, say he retires and then the next year they win a World Series or something, like, man, that would just suck. And I would just, you'd have to feel terrible.
Yeah. You'd be like, what the heck? Yeah. Cursed. Almost.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I mean that, and that's what it's shaping up to be. I mean, he's, you know, there's a decent chance that something like that happens where he plays, you know, let's say he plays out the duration of his contract and the Royals still aren't good. By the time he left, they'd probably be almost good. You know, I mean, maybe they're in a position to trade him at the end of his deal and, you know, he goes on to a contender. Or, heck, I mean, there's he's been coming up in rumors now. So, I mean, it might happen much sooner than that. But there's a very real chance that that would happen, that, like, you know, he's departing just as, like, Nick Prado and Sully Matias and the rest of that gang are all, you know, just starting to come up, where they're, you know, basically they're having the 2011 Royals year. You know, he might be in that kind of territory. It's not crazy to think about, which would suck.
That would suck. And it would feel, you know, at best, like the Mike Sweeney situation, where, you know, Sweeney wasn't quite knocking on the doorstep of that window. He was gone long before it. But at the same time, you know, he put up a lot of great years on a lot of really bad teams, and he stuck it out with the Royals when he didn't have to. He could have just not signed a contract. He could have demanded that he was traded. He could have done something, but he didn't. He stayed true to the team, true to the contract that he signed, and, you know, was repaid essentially with nothing as far as his Royals career was concerned. I mean, besides having a very good Royals career, but, you know, he got traded to the Phillies. I think it was that 09 season where they had won the year before and they went to the World Series, and he was just kind of a bench player. And so, oh, win it for Mike Sweeney. How cool would that be? And, you know, yeah, it would have been cool, but that, so it could be a situation, you know, like that, where maybe at the last year or two of his, he either gets, you know, goes off as a free agent or gets traded or something, and finds a spot on a team, a Raul Mondesi type role for the 2014 Royals, even though, was Mondesi on that playoff roster?
He was up in the World Series in 2015, but more or less is like,
it was 2015. Yeah.
It was like the Ben Zobrist insurance in case his wife went into labor and he had to leave, even though she said he was not leaving.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was necessary or not, but that was at least the idea behind it. So, you know, that's how the story's going to go.
Yeah. So that's kind of an aside. So hopefully lots of good things happen.
A lot of asides.
Yes.
That's what we
do. That's kind of what this season is. One giant aside with lots of mini ones. So you kind of mentioned earlier talking about the young pitchers and how their next few starts are going to be, at Yankee Stadium. And right now, as we look forward, the Yankees are well behind the Red Sox in the East, but they are pretty solid command. I shouldn't say command, but, you know, they've got a decent lead for the wild card there. So it's not necessarily shaping up to be for the Royals to be able to keep this mini hot streak going here. I mean, when you look at who the Royals are pitching, and, I mean, Duffy pitched today, so it's all those Jacob Junis, Brad Keller, Heath Fillmyer, all those guys are going to be the ones pitching in New York. How do you feel about this coming weekend in New York?
Oh, gosh. I mean, You know, and maybe they'll figure it out. But I mean, the one thing that kind of pops up with Yankee Stadium, and maybe it's not, you know, I don't know the numbers behind it, but it's Yankee Stadium. You know, it's not the original, of course, but it's still Yankee Stadium, and that can be intimidating for a lot of people. Maybe not some of these guys. I mean, Keller doesn't seem to be intimidated by anything.
No.
When he's on the mound, so maybe it won't matter to him. But I could definitely see it that if Junis doesn't have his slider working, it could be a long start. Well, probably not long for him, but a long game for everybody else. You know, it just it depends. I don't know how they're going to react. I mean, it's going to kind of show a little bit about, you know, how they respond to being in that kind of situation against a really good team that can hit the crap out of the ball. So I'm morbidly interested to see what happens. I don't think the results are going to be great, but, you know, we'll see. Then the Royals go to Chicago, then they go to Minnesota. They come home and get the Cubs. So, I mean, it's like, didn't get that much easier.
Look out, Baltimore.
Yeah.
That's what that says.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, like we said, this is the chance to learn and see what they can do. And maybe you get surprised and Birch Smith goes out to Yankee Stadium and strikes out 9 and walks none and gives up, you know, just one run or something and looks really good. And maybe something, you know, kind of develops from there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see those guys get shelled and leave before the fourth, you know, because it's a tough team and a tough park to play in. And, you know, the Yankees are good. The Royals are bad. It's like,
have you ever seen Catch Me If You Can, the movie?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I have not.
Well, this will for the listeners out there.
Someone else, I'm sure, has seen it.
So there's, it's, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is talking to his dad, Christopher Walken, and his he's talking about his dad. Sorry, and he said, you know, or no, it's just talking to his dad. Anyway, not important. But he says, you know why the Yankees always win? And Leonardo DiCaprio's response is, oh, because they have Mickey Mantle. And he goes, no, because of the pinstripes on their uniform. You know, just this, basically making the point that, you know, people lose before they even. This movie takes place in you know, 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Or I think it was 60s, 70s, whatever. But it's, you know, people have lost before they go into the stadium is essentially the point because of, you know, it's the Yankees.
It's the Yankees, yeah.
So, you know, as you mentioned, it can be very intimidating for players. So it'll be interesting to see how some of the young players do react to that. And we also could be getting a preview of Mike Moustakas in his new home. We talked about it last week, how the Yankees have been rumored to have some interest in Moose. And I always love trades where they just walk across the locker room from one to the other. If you can get a trade worked out where you get traded to a team in the city that you're in, I love it. I just think it's hilarious. But that would be absolutely hilarious, really funny if that's the case. But the he has, I don't know if the, it's kind of hard to say at this point who has had really the most kind of smoke to the fire in terms of rumors about who is interested in Moustakas, but we've had a lot of teams with quite a bit of interest, and we've, you know, keep hearing more and more about the market heating up for Mike Moustakas. And you've heard, you know, Milwaukee's been interested, the Phillies have been interested, New York's been interested, Boston's been interested, you know, who knows what varying levels of interest those teams have, but those are the ones that we've kind of heard the most. So, and like we said, we know he's going to be traded. Today's the 25th of July, so less than a week remains until the trade deadline.
Yep, next Tuesday.
At this point, Mike, handicap this for me. Where do you think he's going?
Well, you know, I have no idea. I mean, Bob Nightingale earlier today said that 9 teams were interested.
Wow.
9 teams.
Exactly.
That's what I thought of too. He said 6 National League and 3 AL. And we were trying to kind of sort this out and figure it out, talking with everybody else from BP Kansas City, and couldn't really like hammer out all the teams, but like the teams that have been linked to him the most I kind of remember Atlanta, even in free agency, was kind of linked to him here and there. I think a couple of the top 50 free agent predictor, you know, articles had him going to Atlanta. I think they'd have interest, but they, you know, they're sitting, you know, game and a half behind the Phillies in the standings. So, I mean, there's a reason for both of those teams to go try to get somebody. You know, the Yankees have talked about maybe wanting him at first base. There was something by Jerry Krasnick today saying that Atlanta is interested, but it's fairly minimal. So who knows? I don't know. I mean, if I had to guess one spot, I would say Philadelphia is probably the most likely. I think Milwaukee might have a shot. There was, I think Buster Olney maybe reported it, but he mentioned something about they thought that, oh, I'm drawing a blank at the guy's name. He plays Travis Shaw, plays third for them now, might be able to move to second base. So if they'd got Moustakas, he could play third, Shaw could play second. You know, that might be potentially a spot to go. But I don't know. I mean, the Royals are fairly leak-proof. You know, not a lot has ever gotten out of Dayton Moore's front office as far as news that they don't want out. For the, you know, like if it's out there, if there's a leak, I'm pretty sure that they put it out there to kind of just test things. Or it's a rogue agent or something like that, kind of letting the info spill out. But, you know, for the most part, the Royals keep a tight ship. And just like, you know, when Moustakas signed during spring training, you know, it came out of nowhere. It was like we were recording this show and 1 minute, you know, they're talking about, oh, there's interest. And then 20 minutes later, they have an agreement. And it's like it's that quick. And the news comes out that suddenly with the Royals. So, I mean, it could just happen. It's probably going to be something that the Royals make a formal announcement like a minute after Ken Rosenthal reports it. I mean, it's just, I think it's going to be something just sudden like that. So if I had to guess, I would say Philadelphia is probably the most likely, maybe then Milwaukee, then Atlanta. And then I don't know from there. But I think like we kind of talked a little bit last week, I think it definitely is to the Royals' benefit to get something worked out over the next week, just because right now they can negotiate with any team that has interest. And after the trade deadline, they can only negotiate with a, you know, either the team that claims him on waivers or he has to get through waivers. And, you know, for a guy like Moustakas making only, you know, $3 million or so the rest of the year, I could definitely see a team claiming him and being totally fine if the Royals just gave him up. You know, I mean, a lot of times when those guys go through waivers, it's somebody with like a big contract who's still owed like $8-9 million and they're not performing that well. And so it's like, you can be pretty sure that the team's not going to pick them up because they have to assume the whole contract, either the remainder of the contract or the rest of that year, if they're going to be a free agent. And so with Moustakas, he's going to be a free agent. You know, there's like a 1 million, mutual option and, you know, maybe $3 million on his salary. And I don't think that's going to be a deterrent against teams putting in a claim. So my guess is that if he doesn't get traded before the deadline, the Royals are probably going to be in a situation where they have one team to maybe trade him to, the one team to negotiate with, which, you know, that could be, you know, maybe Cleveland. If they want to, you know, they're the lowest of the division leaders, they might want to do that. It might even be a team like Oakland or something that decide they're going to claim him, or even the Angels. You know, if the Angels in a week are a couple games better than they are now, you know, those guys go through waivers through their league first, and it goes in, you know, from the worst team at the bottom of the standings to the top team. And, you know, so those teams that are behind anybody else have a chance to block other teams. And I could definitely see Cleveland doing that, which wouldn't be too bad because I think the Royals could work out some kind of deal and Cleveland has some players. But, like, it's the kind of spot where you want to leverage all those teams against each other. Like, you want to try to get Atlanta trying to outbid Philadelphia. That's what you're looking for. You're trying to get Milwaukee saying, hey, we're trying to just get past a slump. We want to go get Mike Moustakas and see what he can do. And we want to get him before Philadelphia or Atlanta. And, you know, you can leverage those guys against each other. But in August, he's got to clear waivers to do that. So, I think the Royals can kind of get some of those teams interested now. And they can get a deal done before, I think, what's 2:00 Central Time on Tuesday or something like that. It's usually like 2 or 3. It's the middle of the afternoon. I mean, that's kind of where you're at. That's kind of what it looks like. It's, you've kind of got to get a deal done in that time because that's your best chance to get your best return. And it's not necessarily the best time on August 1st or 2nd. So I don't know, but I would say from what's been reported, the Phillies have seemed to have the most times being interested, I guess, based on reports, at least since like May.
Yeah.
But, man, I don't know. And if 9 teams are interested, who knows? It's a complete toss-up. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's not going to end the year as a Royal, I don't think. No. I can't imagine that unless he gets hurt, which would be about right, but yeah, I have no idea.
And it's good though. 9 teams. I mean, that's good level of interest. Cause like you said, that gives them a lot of opportunities to try and leverage that so that they can get, you know, because we've talked about it before, the trade deal, it's not going to wow anybody where you think, oh my God, you know, like what the Orioles got for Machado, but the more teams in the deal, the more teams in the running, the better the chances that you're going to, you know, maybe somebody gives you a prospect a little bit higher than they were planning on because some other team, you know, was going to give something else. And the Royals can do that a lot. You know, it's like that scene in Moneyball where Brad Pitt is calling the two GMs back and forth saying, oh, I got, you know, San Francisco is interested in Rincon. What do you want from him before him, you know, and all these kind of things. Like that's how the game is played. So the more rumors like that out there and the more teams that are actually interested, the more opportunities the Royals have to make that count to where they can get a good return and maybe a better one than they were expecting for Moose. So I hope that's the case. And it'll, you know, before we record next week, it'll happen. So, like you said, unless he gets injured, it's going to happen. So, I'm definitely curious to see where it goes. I think that kind of wraps up most of the stuff for this week. Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? I think we hit most of the things that we noted.
The only kind of like small things. Let's see. Ian Kennedy is going to be in the DL for a while. It sounds like Jorge Soler is, I think, off crutches is what was reported. Or at least mostly off crutches, but he's still a ways away. I know that Jesse Hahn and Blaine Boyer and Eric Skoglund started some rehab assignments this week, so within the next couple weeks they might be coming back. There's probably going to be some 40-man roster spots open if the Royals make some trades, so you know that's something to kind of look at. Bubba Starling had a setback. He's had a couple of oblique problems over the last year and a half.
This is my shocked voice.
Right. And then when he was – he got to back to Omaha, I think. Or no, he was back home in Gardner, I believe, and dislocated a finger. So that's going to keep him out. So I don't know. I don't know what that means for him. The Royals got Brian Goodwin right after. So, you know. Probably portends that Bubba Starling won't make his major league debut this year. If he does, it's in September. So who knows? But yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, there's, you know, not a lot of stuff happening. We just got out of the All-Star break, so it's not, you know, not a lot.
Calm before the storm, if you will.
Super interesting stuff. Yeah, I mean, I really think that Moustakas will get traded. The Royals don't seem interested in trading Danny Duffy. I don't think they'll trade Whit Merrifield. I do think they'll trade Lucas Duda, who I think is ahead of Eric Hosmer now in OPS, I believe.
Hey-o!
So, you know, there's that.
For those keeping tabs.
Just in case.
Well, similar to the Mike Moustakas thing where I predicted the home runs, if your prediction still – I don't believe we made any qualification that he had to be a Royal with that higher OPS.
No. No, I don't think we did.
There you go. That'll be a win for you if we can, if that ends up happening.
If he keeps it up, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took a really good week for him to do it, but yeah, you know.
Hey.
Counts.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, that's about it. I mean, Chester Cuthbert's, I don't think we talked about this last time. He had another kind of issue, so he came off of rehab. I would bet if the Royals need a 40-man roster spot, I think they're at 39 right now, so they don't necessarily need one. But, like, if they end up, he could definitely go to the 60-day. He's definitely over that 60-day threshold anyhow. So, you know, that's kind of it. I don't know. Right now it's the Royals are going to New York. They got four games there. You know, let's see what happens. Maybe they'll play spoiler or maybe they'll just get hammered. I don't know. That's about all that I got.
Yep. And that's about all that I got. So with that, we'll leave you whenever, wherever you are listening to this show. We'll be back next week. We'll be talking about Mike Moustakas' trade, no doubt, and possibly some other ones as well. Should be an interesting, fun little week. It always gets kind of hectic near the trade deadline, and we'll be recording after it, so we'll be able to talk about it all. Definitely looking forward to that. It's always a fun show. So
be sure to tune in. I love the trade deadline.
I know. It's fun, especially in a season like that for the Royals. It really is one of the most exciting parts of the season.
Yeah,
so,
if your team sucks or your team's good, it's really fun.
Yes.
If you're in the middle, it's not that interesting. But
it's those years like the last couple for the Royals that have been not that interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, even though last year they made some trades trying to cash in all the chips. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. How'd those turn out?
We'll see what happens. We'll be back next week definitely to talk about it. So be sure to tune in next week. Until then, if you want to scratch that Royals itch, then go ahead and visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, of course. Always been a great sponsor to us for so long. If you want to beat the heat, go out and get some cold beverages there and sit up on the nice, very nice and ventilated deck that they have, rooftop deck that they have. Go out there and have some fun in Westport. If you want to stay inside and get that Royals info, then be sure to go to BP Kansas City. We have always, as always, tons of good content coming from all our great writers. Dare I say, our content is better than the Royals actually are this year, relatively speaking.
Yeah, so, that's usually how it's gone with Royals blogging. It's like, well, putting all this effort into the bad teams, and then the good teams is just a party.
Exactly. But I'm okay with that. As long as we get the good teams, then I'm okay with that trade-off happening.
Right.
So anyway, that's all we have for this week. Be sure to visit us next week. We'll be back talking trades and talking what it means for the Royals' future. Hopefully something good. So we'll see you next week. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.